is the Monday Mindset Podcast, where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 52. It's been a whole year.
Ta-da!
And this week, it's Terry's turn to share something. What have you got for us today, Terry?
Well, Daisy, since this is the 1 year anniversary of starting the podcast, as far as episode 52, I am going to do this one truly in the spirit in which we designed the podcast. And that is, you and I are just going to have a conversation about something. Oftentimes, you and I both come to record, and whoever's turn it is to record, we have notes that we're going through and figuring out how we're going to share that. And today I'm coming to you with no notes. So
exciting.
We'll see how this goes. Yeah. We'll see. It can be wonderful, or it may be my hodgepodge of words wandering around the place.
Well, of course, nobody will ever know because we have this fantastic editor that tidies everything up.
The best podcast editor ever, Daisy Bracknell. So yes, that will probably help. So what happened for me to prepare this time is I start going through some of my favorite podcasts and start looking. And I found one. I went back to Mind Valley, which is a podcast that I really enjoy. And there was an author in there that I had listened to before, but I thought, oh, I should listen to this one. And to be honest, I didn't really like the episode. It was more of a live interview, and then they brought on guests and things. So I thought, okay, that's not quite it. But I know I want to talk about this woman and her work. So I went back and went to another one of my favorite podcasts because they all bring on these amazing guests. So I went to an episode of The School of Greatness with Lewis Howes. And it is from episode 1083.
Wow.
Makes our 52 sound like a drop in the bucket. But this episode is called How to Heal Your Painful Memories, Thoughts, and Beliefs to Create a Greater Future with Dr. Nicole LaPera. So I was listening to this, and then I thought, wait a minute. I just had a conversation with a client this week who asked me if I had read the book, How to Do the Work, by Dr. Nicole LaPera. Hmm. So I went back and listened to the book. Now, oftentimes you and I will talk about a book that we'd read long ago, like when you talked about Gretchen Rubin's work, or we'll talk about a book that we've heard the gist of, but haven't yet gotten to read the whole book yet. So I listened to the book, and I have to say, Daisy, think back to all the books we've talked about in the past few months. Get this one first. I think this is a must read based on some of the things that you and I have talked about, because what she does, I just can't say enough positive about it. I feel like she wrote the book that if I were going to write a book, I would want to write. She did it much better than I would, but it's such a good book. It's full of psychological theory, but brought into more modern times. So she was trained analytically, like to be an analyst. And that's a very old-fashioned type of training. But she also focuses on things like psychoneuroimmunology, which is really looking at the brain, stress, and our immune system. And so looking at these things fascinates me. I listen to a lot of people talking about this in the biohacking world and medical doctors talking about this. She actually in this book talked about, for mental health, looking at your nutrition. I know this would excite both of us. So she talks about the fact that if you're eating really problematic food that is disrupting your gut biome, your mental health is going to be affected. Your immune system is going to be affected. And when any of these things are out of balance, it's all out of balance. So many good things in this book.
Interesting. What was it called again?
How to Do the Work. And here's another thing that I really liked about it, in my opinion. Sometimes when you read a book that covers a lot of knowledge, you get a really tiny smattering of each thing, but it's hard to even still put them together. Mm. I think she did a really good job of giving enough information about any of these topics that it really could launch you into learning more about it and broadening your scope. But as the title of the podcast episode says, how to heal your painful memories, thoughts, and beliefs to create a greater future. This does go back into what some of us might think of as traditional psychological approach. And some people start to roll their eyes when I say some of these things sometimes, but going back to our inner child and really recognizing that so many of the problematic responses we have now as adults, the habits that we have, the dynamics we recreate over and over in our relationships, mm-hmm. that they all stem back from what we learned early on.
That's where it all starts.
It does. And much of it by the age of 7. So we weren't very sophisticated little beings at that time. So we didn't have better ways to make sense of these things. And again, she talks about how when we experience certain things at a young age, it imprints on us physiologically, chemically, as well as thoughts and beliefs. And so it's really powerful. And she goes through some of her own examples of her journey and some of her struggles. Someone who suffered with a lot of panic attacks, mood, other issues, had to disconnect from her family for a period of time because of being in a very enmeshed family and just needing to have better boundaries with family. But she talks about even her study of her own life to look back, that she was basically imprinted with so many things from her mom's experience when she was in utero. Mm. And so it's not like blaming our family or blaming our mom, but it's just being realistic. We, of course, absorbed things in that environment. When we were 4 years old and we're watching chaotic things happen, or maybe we were dealing with someone who was so working on meeting their own needs just to survive and support the family that they couldn't address other needs. So as I was listening to this, I was thinking about so many of the episodes that you and I have done. And I was just thinking about the one that I last brought to you, which was, you know, recognizing our needs. And I think this book, it's just even a step above that, to really recognize, what are my patterns? What are the physiological responses I have to things that I don't even understand, but I get uncomfortable and I then steer away from that type of interaction or that type of task? I just think there's so much potential in this book for both of us. Mm. And if we are any indicator of our audience, then I think really good stuff for everyone. So, of course, what she really walks through in this book is digging into where did we have our kind of injuries or wounds as a child, trauma, so to speak. Now, sometimes people think trauma has to look a certain way. It had to be sexual abuse, or it has to be this, or it's not considered trauma. And the reality is that that's not the only way to look at trauma. Trauma is something that is really just disruptive to our system. And again, imprints on us danger signals or stress responses. And we learn those emotional responses connected to those memories. And then when they're triggered again in the future, our body holds that physical memory of it. Again, activating same old responses.
I remember somebody defining trauma, and I think people often downgrade their own experience. It wasn't traumatic enough.
Right.
You know, my trauma, I can't classify it as trauma. But they were explaining it like this, that trauma is an event where you felt helpless, you felt powerless to do anything about it.
Exactly.
And that can be so many different things that are specific to the individual, specific to the context, specific to something that you wouldn't consider traumatic if it happened to you mm-hmm. as an adult, but as a child when you were powerless to do anything about it. Something that seemingly really mm-hmm. small and insignificant can be a traumatic event, can't it? That stays with you into adulthood.
And I'm glad you said that, because that's exactly one of the things to work on, creating a different life and relieving some of these negative things, is to actually realize I'm not in that place anymore where I was powerless and couldn't do anything, and start to recognize now when I physiologically get that old reaction, I need to do something to bring myself into the present day and know I'm not powerless to that. So one of the things that this book, now I said I listened to it, so I did the audio version of it because I was so excited I didn't have time to wait and get the copy of the book. But you know, some books come with an accompanying PDF that has things that are in the book that you aren't just going to listen to, but you need to read. Mm-hmm. One of the things she included in this is a glossary of holistic psychology terms. And so to me, I had to kind of laugh that anytime there's a list of terms that you might need to understand to read the book, it makes me laugh a little bit, but it is a really good resource. But one of the things she talks about, or the whole book is about holistic psychology, and I think this is an important concept. And they define this as a practical healing philosophy that considers and addresses all parts of the person, mind, body, and soul, encourages the exploration of causes of symptoms rather than suppressing them, and acknowledges the interconnectedness of the universe. So it's the science, the woo-woo, everything all kind of brought together. But if you go through the book, what she really does is help kind of guide you into exploring, first, just learning about why this approach, learning about epigenetics, learning that our fate is not based on our genetic code, that, you know, we have mechanisms based on what we eat, what environmental factors we're exposed to, what toxins we have in our body. We can turn on and off our gene code, all kinds of things. So she goes through the first few chapters just to really highlight the philosophy, I guess you would say, and then helps you to think about what are your wounds? What are the wounds that you carry forward from childhood? And it's not, again, it's not blaming anyone. It's not to find fault with anyone. But if we go back to the episode about acknowledging our needs, this is an important piece. Was I heard when I was a kid? Did I learn that it was safe to have needs? Did I learn anyone could help me with my needs? She then goes through the kind of archetypes based on our wounds, how we learn to cope with them. So maybe we become the overachiever and we learn that we're going to be valuable enough by overdoing everything, always being perfect, achieving. The more we achieve means we are loved and we are lovable. I could recognize myself in a few of these, but definitely one of, for me, is the underachiever. And this is an archetype that it's about, I don't want to draw attention to myself. I want to go under the radar a little bit because otherwise I'm open to criticism and I could be exposed and fail. Mm. And you and I have talked a lot about that. You know that that's an ongoing challenge for me. So reading this again was helpful for me just to consider, how is it that these things are still playing out for me at this stage in my life? Then she talks about doing some physical things to make sure you're okay in the moment. It made me think of your episode with the TRE. So for some people to be okay in the moment when these difficult responses come up, physiological responses almost that feel like they might hold us back or that might interfere with your way of approaching a situation, or they might actually paralyze you and make you feel like you can't handle a situation and you just need to escape or shut down. And so finding ways to physiologically be in a safer, better space. For some people, that's going to be movement, like you were talking about with TRE. For some people, it might be a workout. For you, it might be going and taking the dogs out. For someone, it might be one of the biggest ones she talked about was breath work. Mm. And using breath work as a way to be embodied, be in your body and be able to know that you're safe in your body. She talked all about the sympathetic and the parasympathetic system. She talks about the polyvagal theory and the vagus nerve, all kinds of things that you can tell I was geeking out as I was listening to this book. Mm.
And that's fascinating, isn't it? The whole polyvagal. Yeah, I've watched presentations on that. Yeah, very interesting.
So this whole idea of, you know, you have to be okay and you have to know that you're okay so that you don't have to keep experiencing it the way you did in the past, as you said, when it was initial trauma because you were a kid that couldn't get out of the situation or whatnot. So then she talks about this concept of trauma bonds or bonding, trauma bonding. And it's a pattern of relating to other people in a way that mirrors or reenacts our earliest attachments with parents or caregivers. They typically are dynamics that aren't real comfortable, like emotional abandonment, lack of boundaries, enmeshment, or avoidance. And we play those out now in platonic relationships, romantic relationships, boss-employee relationships everywhere. So this is a really important chapter, I think, and just really recognizing these patterns of how we interact and where it comes from. She also talks about attachment theory. So if you're a psychology buff and you like those old studies when they have the parent come in and out of the room and the 18-month-old attaches to them or goes back to them or ignores them, she talks about that. She then spends quite a bit of time talking about boundaries, which I thought was a huge part of this book because it is a topic that I think most of us are not comfortable enough with, skilled enough with, both setting boundaries, reinforcing boundaries, and also honoring boundaries, our own and other people's. So this is a chapter I think I could listen to about 5 times. She then also talks about reparenting, kind of reconnecting with yourself in the attachment ways, being that type of support for yourself and reparenting that inner child, those wounds. Talks about emotional maturity, interdependence, all kinds of good things. But here's one of the reasons I love this book so much, besides the fact that she covered like 30 topics that I thought were really awesome topics. She gives you prompts for some journaling. You know, sometimes you read a book about boundaries. You're like, yeah, I really need to work on boundaries. That's a good, but you're thinking about it more philosophically. She jumps right into, do your boundaries look like this? Do you have a hard time with this? Here's how you can do this. Like, she makes it very practical, which I find very useful. She also talks about a strategy that I have not gone to her website yet to look for the resource, but she talks about future self journaling, which also brings in the topic of neuroplasticity. So rather than, okay, today I hope it's a good day, yesterday was okay, gotten that one argument with my partner yesterday, but I'm doing okay, that the future self journaling is you start writing about what's happening in the future as if it's already happened. And you have heard me talk about this when I talk about Marissa Peer. I talk about this a lot in my work with clients. Your brain doesn't know if the event happened or not. It's you telling it the information, showing it the information, using the words. So if you're talking about a future event for yourself, your brain's not going to say, wait a minute, that didn't happen yet. It's going to go with it. It's going to roll with it. And so this is one way that we can start to recreate things and go with these new neural pathways.
Mm. So laying the pathways for what you want to happen.
Absolutely. Mm. Again, because your brain thinks, okay, I get it. That's that. It already takes it in as real. And a topic that I talk about tons in my other work, and you brought it up last week, in the podcast that you did, the idea that our brain prefers what is familiar. Our subconscious brain is where most of our responses come from. And again, these were learned by age 7, and we have just repeated them thousands and thousands of times. 95% of our thoughts are old thoughts. You and I are repeating our same thoughts every day. Only 5% are new, and that's coming from our conscious mind. And so a big piece in this book is she keeps talking about having to, or the goal of making these processes more conscious, tapping into your conscious mind more rather than just acting out of your subconscious mind, because that's the past. And another person that I listen to all the time, Joe Dispenza, this is one of his biggest things, that we live in the past emotion. We live in the past emotion of who we were at that time, and we just keep living it out over and over and over again, and that we need to learn how to recreate our future as someone different, so to speak. And so she talks a lot about this in this book, setting up the new without letting the old keep holding us back. So, as you can tell, pretty excited about this. I'm sure there are some people who won't like it and it won't be a great book for them, but I think a lot of people who follow us, this is a book that will really could be a game changer for a lot of people if they read it and really dig in. I could tell as I was reading it, I was just kind of listening to it quickly to absorb as much as I could, but it's one that I now need to go back and start applying the prompts that she gives, actually getting out my journal and writing some of this stuff. I just think it's a super book. Again, you know me, I like authors of these books when they're also very real. And she is pretty vulnerable, I think, in the book and in the interviews I've listened to. She has struggled a lot in her life. Like I said, she talked about having to disconnect from her family. If I'm remembering correctly, her family was very enmeshed. And in a very enmeshed family, you learn everything is about the family. And so if you aren't doing everything at all times, focus on the family and sharing everything with your family and knowing everything that's going on and sacrificing yourself for the good of the family, then you're the outcast. You're not being good. And kids learn that very young. So she had to take time away, and it was really a painful time. But Lewis asked her about where things were with her family. This episode was from a little while back, but she had recently been on a book release tour, and she shared the example that her family was following it, and her dad was writing comments on social media and things. So even though there was a lot of difficult information about the family in there, that she's been able to reconnect with them in different ways with better boundaries, and there's a lot of growth happening. It made me think of the whole concept of boundaries. People don't like our boundaries at first. Our boundaries set limits for people. Mm-hmm. I think her example of it, though, was by her setting her boundaries, she could grow. She could interact differently. And one of the secondary gains of that is they have to respond differently. Now, not all people are willing to hang in there and respond differently, but her family did, and there's growth now happening. So again, I was so excited to share this one with you, and I couldn't even take notes. There's just so much stuff that my notes would have taken me 4 hours to go through with you. But I definitely think this is a book that, again, you and I could be like in a book club and just do this book and share our responses and things, because I think it's one that you would really identify with a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting, and I can certainly pick up on your excitement. And more often than not, we're interested in the same thing. So I already know if it's something that you found really interesting that I'm going to too. But certainly the things you've spoken about that's in it, yeah, I certainly find that really interesting. And I'm going to get it probably pretty much as soon as we finished and start listening to it. It sounds like it'd be very, very, very useful for me personally. But I think it's interesting what you were saying about, especially with this family dynamic and going back to your childhood and figuring out how some of these patterns got put in place and how to, you know, potentially change that perspective as an adult and help yourself deal with them when you fall into these automatic responses. Mm. I know it's something that I struggled with a lot when I was in counseling, that I kind of felt guilty about talking about the things in childhood. Like, you know, when you're talking about things that your parents did or whatever it was that have set up some kind of dynamic in your life that maybe, you know, have led to future problems that you have as an adult, maybe, you know, to do with weight or to do with depression or whatever it is, trying to unearth where they all started. And more often than not, it goes back to your childhood and your parents, mm-hmm. doesn't it? But I think the thing is, and if you were ever to have that conversation with the people, with your parents, the automatic response, I certainly know the response if I was to have a conversation with my mother, for example, would be immediate one of defensiveness, because they'd assume that you were coming from a place of wanting to apportion blame. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's not about trying to blame somebody. It's not about putting blame at somebody's door. It's just trying to figure out why you react a certain way to things from your experience.
Absolutely.
You know, I think of a very, very difficult conversation I had with my sister that just really, really just negatively impacted me. I was in pieces when I came back, and it was a lot of counseling sessions to get around that. And I was trying to have a discussion. With hindsight, it was very much the wrong time to be having that discussion, but having a discussion about the ways that I've been set up with sort of feeling like a bit of an outsider, because I kind of was a bit of an outsider in the family, in this new family that was created with my, you know, my mother and my stepfather and my brother and sister. But they would do things like, you know, when it was that summer holiday, that 2-week summer holiday that is a real bonding experience for a family, isn't it? They went on the summer holidays. Not to say that I never went on holidays with them. I did, but I went over to Thailand to spend my summer holiday with my father, and they went for the big bonding summer holiday. And it's things like that, but it's a very difficult conversation to have, because the other person automatically thinks you're trying to put blame at their door. You're being judgmental. You're trying to maybe elicit an apology or whatever it is, but you're not really. All you're trying to do is figure out why you respond a certain way to things, and just sort of talking it out, I guess, to explain yourself, to explain, well, this is why I tend to behave in a certain way. This is what I've uncovered. This is what it goes back to. But it can, more often than not, it just creates very, very difficult conversations that you can't really end up, mm-hmm. you can't end up having a sensible conversation about.
I'm trying to think of how to respond to that. I don't know how the author would respond, but in my own practice and in my own life, what I would say is, generally, I think her approach is less about processing it with them and more about processing it with yourself. What are the wounds? How are they coming up now? What do you experience chemically, physically? What happens? What are your patterns? And then how can you change those? But I think the big part that would come up, and let's use an example around weight. And this is one that she used. I can't remember if it was in the book or in the podcast, because she is the narrator in the audiobook. So both times I was listening to her talk, so I can't remember which one this is in, but I think it's in the book. Creating a boundary, because someone's making comments about your weight. So, you know, to be able to say something to the effect, hey, I've been working on some things, and I'm aware that when you make comments about my weight, I feel criticized and feel like there's no way that I can ever measure up. And my guess is that you're unaware of this, and that's probably not how you intend for me to feel. but that is my experience. So what I need for us, because I care about this relationship, is I need for us not to talk about my weight. So that's setting that boundary. It's not waiting for that person to say, oh no, this is what I mean, or why do you take it that way? It's not debating it. It's saying, I'm aware that I'm working on this because this is how I respond when this happens. Kind of regardless of why you're doing it, this is how I'm responding. So I need for us not to do this. You know, I mean, that's a nice way to say it. You know, could be another way to say, listen, your opinions and thoughts about my weight are not important to me at this time. I need to focus on this in the way I'm focusing on it. So I'm going to ask you not to bring that up. If our conversation goes there, I will end the conversation. Those are very clear boundaries that many of us struggle with having. And let's say, for example, that person, whether it's a family member or whoever, says, oh, but you're too sensitive. That's not what I mean. Why do you always do that? To say, you know what? I'm not going to debate that with you right now. I'm working on this for me so that I respond differently. And so what I need right now is that we don't do that, because I'm going to do this differently. And the more they keep going, you say, okay, here we go. This is what I'm saying we need not to do. So I need to end this call, or we need to time out here and let's go do something else, or whatever it is. But I think sometimes the tendency is we want to, or we think we should be able to explain ourselves to the other person.
Mm.
And as you said, though, sometimes we are looking for an explanation from them to understand. And sometimes I think those pieces don't have to happen for us to do some changing of how we experience it.
Mm. No, that makes sense. Yeah, I think there is just this often this burning desire to just, explain your behavior. I guess it comes from a position of defensiveness.
Sure.
We've talked about defensiveness before, but you know, you often have imagined conversations about how you would discuss these things with particular family members. But it was often in counseling anyway, not really. This was never going to happen, but I used to feel guilty because even just having the conversation with the counselor that he would think, or that I was thinking, I was trying to explain myself in that. Just explain myself to myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to apportion blame. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
But I guess that just, it all comes back to, again, I suppose, identifying something like defensiveness. Mm-hmm. And okay, so where does this defensiveness come from? And just keep unearthing.
And I think at some level, recognizing, I don't have to justify the fact that every time a conversation, let's say, for example, for me, if I were walking down the street and I saw a circle of people watching a fist fight and they were getting excited and like cheering them on, I would freeze physically. I will catch my breath. I will have a hard time. I will feel paralyzed. I don't need to justify or explain that to anyone. I need to understand what happens when I go into that place and how can I help myself feel safe and process it in a different way so that I don't have that response anymore. Now, that one isn't particular to, you know, the person in this scene, but even to a therapist or to anyone, it's not about justifying, explaining away. It's just gaining my own context for it and say, I know why I do this. My body and my brain, my mind learned this response from when these things happened, regardless of what those people meant when they did them or what the scenario was. I'm carrying with me this way of responding. That's what I want to change.
Mm. It feels also a bit like this need to explain yourself, to justify yourself, kind of goes hand in hand with a difficulty you may have about setting boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It feels like the two don't sit too well together. Mm-hmm. So you kind of need to get over that need for explanation in order to do the more productive and self-care kind of work of setting boundaries.
Mm-hmm. I think if you also listen to or read the part about like the different archetypes, each one kind of responds differently. Like one is very much, so one would be kind of the star, the clown, the one that their job is to just make sure everyone's feeling good all the time. And so they would take away anything bad that was happening and make it good and just watch for people's responses and things. I'm sure, I don't remember the details, but I'm sure there's one that does feel very much like, no, I need you to understand why this was, because I don't feel okay in what, I don't like that I do this response, but you need to understand that it's because of what happened. And not needing that piece of it to do the inner work. Mm. The other thing I liked about the book in general, she keeps coming back to the title, Do the Work. Like, and there's yeah. part of it, it's like, oh, crud. I was hoping if I could just read this book, it would all feel better. But no, there's actual work I need to do. But I just think if we're going to do this work, I think this is the way, you know, this is a good way to approach it. Mm. And I think it just pieces together so many theories that you and I have touched on in so many ways and will continue to touch on. But I think this book for me is kind of the one that brings the majority of it together in a really nice way.
Mm. It sounds like it's got some really good, you know, actionable things to do as well. And you mentioned breath work there, different ways you can, you know, just break that cycle a bit. But yeah, you know, I made a note of that because that's something that's so quick and easy and something that you can just snap into if you practice a few times to be able to mm-hmm. do in the moment, mm-hmm. you know, just a few minutes mm-hmm. of breath work. It's one of the podcasts actually that it's finding the right one to talk about, mm-hmm. but there have been a few that I've listened to where they talk about the benefits of that. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be like a really easy thing that you could rely on, that you could almost maybe even just use as a first stage to sort of catch your breath and calm yourself down a bit before you then go mm-hmm. and do something that, you know, takes a bit longer mm-hmm. that is going to have a bit more of a lasting effect.
She does talk at some point, now that I'm thinking back to what you were talking about before, I think it's more when you're talking about boundaries with people, but finding a good time to do it, like you said, because if either you or the other person already is in kind of an elevated emotional state, that conversation is not going to go well. Mm. One or other is going to be more likely to be defensive. One might be more attacking or something. It's just not going to go well. So to find time to do those conversation when you're both on a good footing together and can have some of those discussions. So,
So what happens when we have a talk without the preparation of notes is that we run extremely long on time, Terry Lance.
Well, Daisy, I just trust your editing that you will find the places to cut.
Well, that was a great conversation. It was indeed a very good way to celebrate our first year of podcasting together. And I'm definitely going to be getting this book on Audible and listening to it.
Great. And I'll be...
So thank you very much for sharing
that. Yeah, I'll be going through round two of it soon, but I'll be getting the prompts and the handouts on her website that I think will be really helpful to go along with it as well. Sounds like she has a ton of resources available, which I always love too, that it's not just you have to keep buying things, but that there's some resources on her site as well. So I hope everyone has a great week, and we will look forward to next week.
Have a great week.
Bye.